Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Sharon Brangman. Dr. Brangman is the Division Chief of Geriatrics at Upstate Medical University, where she practices geriatric medicine. She also directs the Geriatric Medicine Fellowship Program and the Central New York Alzheimer's Disease Assistance Center. She's served in the past as president of the American Geriatric Society. Dr. Brangman, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, let's start with the context here. Could you give me a couple important data markers or trends for the aging of the population in the United States?
Well, we're right now in the midst of a big increase in the people who are 65 and older. So we have the oldest of the baby boomers who are turning 65 at the rate of about 10,000 a day, and that's been going on for a couple of years. But we also have an amazing increase in the number of people who are 85 and older, and that's actually the fastest growing segment of our population right now.
And are there important demographic changes going on within the elderly group? Maybe those are ethnic changes or gender, other kinds of factors that are significant?
Well, women do live longer than men, so that has always been a trend. But we're also seeing that the graying of the population is also becoming browner, so that we have an increase in racial minority groups, ethnic groups, Latino, Asian, and African-American groups.
So thinking about then the aging of the population and its trend here, in terms of healthcare and the cost for healthcare, why is this trend so important for us to be thinking about?
Well, as the older adults become a larger segment of our population, they use more healthcare resources. So right now, older adults are about 12% of the population, but they're using proportionately larger percentage of the healthcare resources. So they're overrepresented in emergency rooms, hospital admissions, use of pharmaceuticals. When we're dealing with people, especially 85 and older, they often need help getting through the day. So they need more help with cooking, cleaning, driving, getting to the toilet, getting dressed, so that we find that those older adults often are using more healthcare resources.
And you mentioned the needs that some of the elderly folks have, particularly the very old. Some of our elderly live in assisted living facilities and in nursing homes. What's been the trend in those populations?
Well, the majority of older people live in the community in their own homes. We have a growing number of people going into assisted living facilities, and that's probably one of the biggest segments of living or residential environments that are going on right now.
And what's the biggest difference between that and then what we typically think of as a, quote, nursing home?
So assisted living means that you usually need help with cooking, grocery shopping, driving, maybe some supervision to make sure you're safe, but you usually can take care of your own basic needs. So that means you can dress yourself, walk, get to the toilet, feed yourself. If we look at the nursing home population, these are usually people who need help with every aspect of day-to-day existence. So these are people who often can't feed themselves, they can't get to the toilet on their own, they can't take a bath or get dressed. So we have a transition where people may go to assisted living, and then depending on what their medical problems are or if they're starting to have problems with their memory, over time they may need more care, and then they would move on to a nursing home for the rest of that care.
And so are these assisted living facilities, or is there a big jump now in those populations and a decline in the nursing homes, or what's the trend there?
Well, there's not necessarily a decline in nursing homes, but there is a big increase in assisted living. So these are usually marketed to people who are overhoused. Maybe their adult children don't live in the area. They're living alone in a big house. It's most likely a woman who's been widowed, is living in a big house, and is just having trouble with house repairs, shoveling snow, getting to the grocery store, maybe a little bit isolated, not having the social connections that she might have had before. And so moving into assisted living allows her to have increased socialization and not worry about house upkeep. And then there's another pair of eyes and ears around should she need some help.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with geriatric care specialist Dr. Sharon Brangman. So moving into the medicine side of this, you're a geriatrician. What are the big differences between traditional medicine and geriatric medicine?
Well, in traditional medicine, care is usually based on one organ system. So you would go to a cardiologist or a heart specialist. Then you might go to a GI doctor, then a lung specialist, and then maybe an orthopedic surgeon. And that doctor would look at that organ system or whatever that specialty might be. In geriatrics, we tend to look at the whole individual. We take into account the different medical problems they might have, their role in the community, their functional status, their cognitive status. We often work as a team, so we have a nurse practitioner, social worker, other people who work with us, and they each have a perspective on the patient that's very important. And we're often not trying to cure the person. These are often people who have multiple medical problems, and they're living with them over time. We always take care of people. So we always say care versus cure. So we're helping people live with multiple medical problems. We assess all the medicines that they're on, and we try to focus on what we can do to keep them independent and enjoy the highest quality of life for as long as possible.
So it sounds like, in some important respects, this is a more holistic approach. And I've read that there are some folks that are advocating that we need to go toward a more holistic approach just generally in medicine. Can you comment on that?
Well, I think it's very important because nobody wants to say, oh, I'm the heart patient in room 203. Everybody wants to be seen in their total context as a person, their role in their family, their relationship with their community, what's important in terms of their values, and then how do their medical problems fit in there. And so I think it is a holistic approach. I think we are holistic people. And specialty information is very important, but we don't want to focus just on an organ system because while you're taking care of one organ system, another one may be in trouble. We have to look at the person in the total context.
Now, at Upstate, you've worked a lot with medical students and with young doctors. What, in your experience, is the biggest thing that they don't know that they need to learn when it comes to treating older adults?
Well, I guess it's a matter of fighting a lot of stereotypes because not everyone has had exposure to grandparents. A lot of the information we get about old people are in the media, and they're often portrayed as cranky or over-sexualized or something that just isn't realistic. And for many medical students who are in their 20s, they may have the perspective that 40 or 50 is old. So I think it's important for medical students to realize that there is still a lot of vitality in life when you're 60, 65, 70, 80, even 90, and that we may not be able to cure someone, but we can always take care of them. And sometimes medicines can have a dual edge to them. Sometimes they can help, but sometimes the side effects can be very detrimental to having a good quality of life. So I always help, or we help to teach medical students to look at the whole person, to spend time and talk with them, and to figure out what their medical problems are and help prioritize how we're going to approach them.
How much exposure does the typical medical student and the typical medical school get to the geriatric side of things?
Well, it really varies across the country because geriatrics is not a requirement. And one of the things that I think is really important is that every medical student should have a substantial exposure to geriatrics because no matter what they end up going into, they're going to be taking care of older people, perhaps with the exception of pediatrics. And then with pediatrics, I always say they're going to be dealing with a lot of grandparents raising grandchildren. So I don't think that there's enough uniform presentation of a good curriculum in geriatrics in most medical schools across the country. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're so concerned about whether or not our healthcare workforce is ready for our aging population.
What's the biggest thing that the patients themselves need to learn about their own healthcare and their health as they move into this elderly category? What adjustments do they need to?
Well, I think that it's important as middle-aged adults, young adults, to start thinking about how you would like to be when you're older. I always say aging well starts with good prenatal care. I think we need to take some responsibility for our health. There's not a magic pill that makes everything go away. And many of the problems that happen as we age are based on our lifestyle choices that we've had throughout life. So I think taking a little responsibility, not going into a doctor's office and expecting a prescription for every problem, and realizing that many things are not going to just disappear, that they need to be worked on and managed over time.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Dr. Sharon Brangman, Division Chief of Geriatrics at Upstate Medical University. Come back to this problem with medical education that you and I were talking about before. More generally, is there a mismatch between the way our healthcare system is set up and the best way to meet the needs of the elderly and elderly care?
Well, there is a big mismatch right now because we don't have enough doctors with skills in geriatrics to meet the needs of our aging population. So my friends who are not in medicine think that I'm in, you know, an excellent field right now because the population is aging, and I keep telling them this is not driven by the demographics. So we do not have enough medical students going into primary care. That's the basic foundation of medicine. And primary care feeds those people who then go into geriatrics. So we don't have enough general internists or family medicine doctors. We have more and more medical students picking specialties. And there's a whole lot of reasons for that. But we have a huge mismatch between what we need to take care of our aging population and what we're actually producing, not just in medical school, but also in nursing school and pharmacy school, physical therapy. All members of the healthcare team are not producing the people that we need to take care of us as we get older.
Are there particular trends in the number of geriatric physicians themselves, that particular specialization? Have they been going up or down?
Well, the number of geriatricians in this country are inadequate to meet current needs, okay. And that's only going to get worse with time. So we train a little over 200 geriatricians a year.
The whole country?
In the whole country. Huh. And we probably need about 16,000. So that gives you an idea of how few we have. And a good number of the geriatricians that we're training are international medical graduates, which means they may not be able to stay in the country. They have to go back to their primary country. Or they have to be deployed to areas where they may be more likely to get a green card. So that's usually less populated areas where there aren't enough physicians. So we have big pieces in our country where there aren't enough geriatrically oriented docs right now.
Now, this is obviously a very complicated question, but what drives this problem? I mean, I imagine that at least for the choice of specialty, money is a factor, among other things. So what are the things that are really driving this mismatch?
Well, it's very complex. Certainly the financing is probably a big piece of it because Medicare is the primary funder. And every year you hear Congress talking about how they're cutting back on Medicare, they're reducing payment to physicians. And when you have a practice that's almost 100% Medicare, that has a big impact. So geriatricians on the big scale of physicians are among the lowest paid. We have medical students who are graduating now with record amounts of debt. It's not unusual for a medical student to graduate owing $150,000 to $200,000 worth of debt. Geriatrics takes time. I can't push, 10, 80, or 90-year-old patients through my office in an hour. And so the amount of time that I spend to take good care of my patients, I can't make it up in volume, as some specialties might. So that's another piece. So you can't really cover your overhead. It's very hard at times to pay all the bills and keep taking care of patients. And so if you're a medical student graduating with a lot of debt, you're not going to pick something that's not going to help you pay off your debt. We also have other issues, and these are more cultural. You know, we're not a very age-oriented society. We're very youth-oriented. And people are very hesitant to deal with older people because they think, oh, you're just going to deal with people who are old and dying, and that's depressing. You know, everything is youth-related, and we want to make sure that we're dyeing our hair and getting rid of wrinkles and doing all these other things to deny that we're getting older. And I always say aging is not a disease, and it's something we should all aspire to. And but that message is just not transmitted in our culture. So there are some cultures that do put value on aging, and unfortunately, I don't think that we do well enough. So a lot of people don't see it as a career.
It's an interesting point there because it gets at something I was thinking about, the political paradox of this, because on the one hand, that elderly group is very politically powerful, as we've seen over and over again in the country's history, in part because they vote in very high numbers. And that manifests itself in one way in terms of, you know, Medicare as an overall support system is very, very strong and highly supported, even if with the cutbacks you mentioned. But you'd think that that might extend then to pressure to have more geriatric physicians. I guess it doesn't trickle down to that level.
No, it really doesn't. And many of my patients don't have a voice because they're older. They may have memory problems, so they can't be that Gray Panther kind of picture that we have in our minds because they're receiving care.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Dr. Sharon Brangman, Division Chief of Geriatrics at Upstate Medical University. I want to ask you a couple questions about Obamacare now and how it relates to these issues. What is the impact of Obamacare on the problems with geriatric care that we've been discussing?
Well, it's not as big as you would imagine because most of my patients are already covered by Medicare, so they're not uninsured. One of the things that we did when I was president of the American Geriatric Society is that we were really fighting to get a primary care bonus built into the Affordable Care Act so that primary care physicians could get a little bit more of remuneration for the work that they're doing. So we were successful in getting that out. I'm not sure how that's going to play out yet in real life, but that's helpful. I'm not sure if it's enough to convince a medical student to go into primary care, but it was a start.
And have you detected among your patients, your elderly patients, any worries about Obamacare, that somehow it's going to hurt their care or their access to care? Because that was getting a lot of press during the consideration of it in the first place.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of political messages in there that really didn't pan out. So for most of my patients, the concern is making sure that Medicare is adequately funded. Right now, it can be very hard to find a doctor who is taking Medicare patients for primary care, brand new patients. There are some specialists that are starting to cut back on Medicare patients as well because of some of the changes in Congress and how they've been cutting back on funding. So I think those are more of an issue than the Obamacare per se.
And have there been any other countries around the world that you think do a particularly good job when it comes to care for the elderly, places where we might learn some things from?
Well, in most other big countries, they have socialized medicine so that everyone gets medical care from cradle to grave. And that includes long-term care and nursing home care. So I think there's a lot of countries that do it very well. We just have a different focus here because it's always been a very individualized system. And if you have the money, you can buy the care. So I think that, yes, we could take some suggestions from a lot of different places, but I just don't think politically we're ready to accept that yet.
I had a couple more personal questions for you now. I would think that this would be emotionally a very difficult medicine to practice for a number of different reasons. For one, as you already pointed out earlier, a lot of the patients are just not going to get better. And I imagine you see a lot of suffering too. So what brought you to this specialization and what sustains you in it?
Well, I started to see that my older patients were being marginalized and their needs weren't being addressed. And I was working in a primary care clinic as a general internist, and I found that my older patients wanted to maintain their independence. They uniformly said they didn't want to be a burden to anyone. And I had a lot of younger people who were coming in, and they wanted a note to stay home from work. And I had older people with lots of medical problems who wanted to keep doing their own laundry and not bothering their daughter. So I started to think, wow, I really like that dynamic. They had great stories. Small changes made huge differences in their quality of life. And so I actually went back and did my training in geriatrics. And I was only in the second group in my hospital because it's still a relatively new specialty in our country. It's been in England and Europe and other places for many years, but it's still relatively new. So I say the late 1980s, it kind of got established in the United States. And so, yes, it can be very difficult work, but I find it very rewarding because I can help people maintain a good quality of life. We can look and find out what is important to them and help them reach those goals. We can keep them comfortable, and we can help them if they are suffering. It is very complex. Kind of ironically, geriatricians are among the highest group of doctors with job satisfaction in the country. We are usually either number one or number two, sometimes changing off with neonatologists or dermatologists. But most geriatricians are very happy and very passionate about their job.
So maybe that's the avenue to fixing the problem, in part, is getting the knowledge of that out there, and perhaps more of them would select it for that reason.
Well, we have a good number of people who pick geriatrics and they know what they're getting into. Mm. We now need some others who see it as a reasonable career. Not everybody's going to love it initially. Some may love it after they do it for a while. I am a firm believer that not everybody loves, say, cardiology or GI or something else. They learn to love it because they want to reach certain goals.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Let's see. I would say not done yet. I've been in this business now for almost 30 years, and it's funny how fast time goes. But I think I still have a lot to do and offer and lots of ways I would like to make an impact in care for older adults.
Second, what's your worst trait?
My worst trait is probably taking on too much and being impatient. And I always have to balance trying to decide when to say no to something. I have so many interests and so many things that I like to do. I want to make sure I don't say yes to so many things that I'm not effective, but that I'm still, you know, helping to make a change and making an impact.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, I guess the biggest surprise was becoming president of the American Geriatric Society, because I remember when I joined it in about 1986 when I was in training and I would go to the meetings, I never thought that I would ever lead that organization. And it's one of those things I didn't really plot out and plan. It kind of unfolded over time. And I just remember the day when I made my acceptance kind of speech, and I was, like, totally awed that this was actually happening. So I'd say that's the biggest surprise.
That was Sharon Brangman. Dr. Brangman, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest. And you can now follow us on Twitter at Campbell Convos.